It is Friday. It is Baseball Barbacast, and Jake Mintz is not here. I have a special co-host on this episode. It is Kennedy Landry, the Rangers beat writer for MLB.com. We're going to talk about the Rangers, and don't worry, it's Friday, so we will be giving you the good, the bad, and the ugly on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world spending months covering the 55th pick in the MLB draft. Kennedy Landry is my co-host today. Kennedy, welcome to our Friday edition of Baseball Barbacast. I know you listen sometimes, and it's great to have you on as
co-host. Yes, I'm a huge fan of the podcast, as Jordan knows. I'm excited to be here and pretending to be Jake Mintz on a Friday afternoon morning.
Please do not pretend to be Jake Mintz. That is the opposite of what I need from you on this episode. I know there's a lot of people right here want to know what we think about Bronny James, the 55th pick. I don't care. But I will say, you know, I was looking. 55th overall picks. Do we have a history of those in the baseball draft that are interesting? And one of them, Owen White.
Wow.
Owen White, a Rangers who's somewhere on the Rangers pitching depth chart. Not a lot of as much attention on ESPN for Owen White.
Maybe
later in the season, if he comes up, back up and, you know, makes some strong outings, maybe we can get Stephen A, you know, given some impassioned opinions about that 55th overall pick. But no, we have no Bronny James opinions, and we certainly aren't going to talk about the other thing that was on television last night. We are going to talk about the Rangers of Texas. Kennedy, I am usually reluctant to go, you know, we love having guests on, but because we pride ourselves on covering the entire league, we don't usually like to go too hard on one team. But hey, this team just won the World Series, and you're my friend. So, and Jake Mintz is biking in Vermont. So the stars have aligned and have given us this opportunity to talk about the Texas Rangers, who lost once again last night at the hands of the Baltimore Orioles. It felt like a situation where the Orioles were like, all right, remember the last time the Rangers were here? Yeah, we're not going to let that happen again. And so all of the runs they did not score against Texas last October were just an absolute barrage last night. I know you are not covering this series in Baltimore right now, but the first half of the show is just going to be kind of talking about this situation in Texas. And by that, I mean the defending world champions are not very good. So let's zoom out a little bit, Kennedy, as you are covering this team on a regular basis. How do we get here roughly? If you had to, you know, give me the elevator pitch, or I guess the opposite of a pitch, because it is not something we are necessarily, you know, trying to be excited about. How did we get to this point where the defending World Series champions are 37-44 and with their playoff odds kind of perilously slipping away? Big picture.
I think entering spring training, they have all these starting pitchers, Max Scherzer, Jacob deGrom, Tyler Malley, you know, on the IL. The kind of sentiment around the team was that, hey, they make it to the trade deadline around 500, closer to 500 than they are right now, then hey, they have a chance to win because this offense is really good. They added some guys in the back end of the bullpen, David Roberts and Kirby Yates. And, you know, you get Jacob deGrom back at the trade deadline, in theory. They, in theory, win the trade deadline, getting three elite starting pitchers back.
Sure.
And basically, the starting pitching, despite what happened last night in Baltimore, has not been the issue with this team. The starting pitching has actually, quite frankly, been pretty good, even if now that they've had even more injuries. Everybody not named Andrew Heaney has been on the injured list at some point, which is actually an insane issue to have. But I think at one point they had eight starting pitchers on the injured list. So that's an issue in and of itself, but this offense has severely regressed. Everybody's slugging, OPS, batting average is down from 2023, whether that's, you know, Adolis Garcia not hitting a home run for a month, Nathaniel Lowe not being able to hit a fastball, which was also an issue last year. It got buried in the depth because everybody else was firing on all cylinders. And Rangers Twitter likes to call out Leody Taveras, but that's the nine-hole hitter, and he's just doing whatever he's doing. And it just is, you know, it's amplified when everybody else is struggling as well. I think Marcus Semien entered last night on a 2-for-41 slump. Corey Seager, you know, got off to a slow start, was on a heater for a bit, and has slowed down a bit.
Now he's back cold again.
Right. Yeah. So all of these things kind of have materialized into a 37-44 record. As you can see.
Yeah. And so, you know, you mentioned a lot of things on there that I want to hit on. And the point I've made to, you know, I've gone on podcasts for other teams where it's like, oh man, our team can't hit. What the heck's going on? And, you know, I am quick to remind a lot of people, and we've said this on the show, like, hitting's really hard in general. Hitting right now is harder than it's ever been. Every lineup, even the good ones, really except for the Orioles, right? Like, the Orioles are like the one team that has been like exempt from this. And the one guy who sucked for them has been Cedric Mullins, who's now been on fire the last, you know, week. So, you know, there's very few teams that actually have consistent production up and down the lineup. But when we're talking about Texas, this was a team that was so good, particularly in the second half of last year. And then obviously, you know, in the postseason, that it felt like even if you have some amount of regression, when you consider what they are adding, and I want to get to some of those younger players too, because I think that's one of the most interesting things about this team. It's just hard to believe that this amount, that they could take this much of a collective step back. But also, if you told me that that was going to happen, I would say, yeah, then this isn't a very good team, because yeah. the depth on the mound is, well, it has kind of stepped up, and some of the guys that they have added have been everything you could have possibly hoped. Right? Look what Michael Lorenzen has given them. Look how amazing Kirby Yates has been as a reliever. David Robertson was outstanding for at least the first, you know, month and a half or so, but everything after that is just really, really, really dire. And they just that's my view of it on it. So, before I get to some of the young guys, because I really want to ask about Wyatt Langford and Evan Carter and kind of where they are now compared to the beginning of the season. Of those hitters, are there ones that we're maybe more concerned about or less concerned about? Are there ones where it's like, oh, they're just, you know, they're hitting the ball hard, they're getting lucky, or they're like, this is notably different? You mentioned Nathaniel Lowe, you know, having issues hitting fastballs. We were previewing the Homer Derby the other day, and we were like, oh, Nathaniel Lowe, he'd be a good Homer Derby. It's like, wait a minute, he has three home runs or two home runs at the time.
He does,
right?
Take electric BP, though, I will say. He's a great BP guy.
So that's so validating. And I know if he ends up being, we could talk about the Derby in a second, but of those hitters, like, Jonah Heim's mm-hmm. another one, right? An all-star last year. Now, catchers, I'm never going to blame too much for having their offense kind of fluctuate. But of those main core pieces, so they're ones we're more optimistic about, more concerned about from your perspective?
Yeah, I think, you know, whatever goes on with Corey and Marcus is Corey and Marcus. They're gonna be fine no matter what. So I think those two guys at the top of the lineup, I don't think anybody's worried about. Even when Corey Seager's going through a cold spell, you're like, whatever, he's gonna rattle off like 10 home runs in five games at some point, probably.
It does feel, he just did it earlier in the season, so I'm sure.
I think Nathaniel Lowe is probably the biggest one when you look at that. He had struggles hitting fastballs last year. It just wasn't amplified because everybody else was firing on all cylinders around him. He won a Silver Slugger 2 years ago, the only year of his professional career that he has hit the fastball well. But you can tell anything that's above 94 miles an hour, he's late on it. Even a lot of his hits are opposite field hits. He's late on them, and he slaps them the other way. So I think that's obviously a big issue. And Adolis Garcia, I think he had a career year last year. He went, you know, Linsanity run in the postseason. And, you know, he was phenomenal.
But then he was awesome in April, too. That's why I wanted to follow up about him, because he seemed to be carrying that over into April. And then since then, it's just been, I think he homered last night, but it's, I don't know what changed. I don't know if they started attacking him differently, but maybe you can.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of everything. He has been a streaky hitter in the past. And so, you know, when he was going through that slump in May, we were like, oh, it's like the time when Adolis slumps. That's what happens. And then it, you know, carries over into June, and then he doesn't homer for a month. And you're like, oh, he's not like seeing anything. Like, you know, Bruce Bochy tried to, you know, switch up the lineup a little bit, put him in three hole, put him in the five hole. But there's not much else he can do, and the whole lineup is struggling as well. So, you know, flipping Adolis Garcia and Jonah Heim is not going to do anything. So I think, you know, he's been working a lot with hitting coaches on kind of his batting stance, or, you know, how he cocks the bat, and things like that. So he can't hit a fastball. Nobody on this team can hit a fastball right now, but Adolis Garcia was one of the best fastball hitters on this team when he's good, and he squares up a pitch, you know, a hanging slider or a fastball in the middle of the plate, and he just drives it. Yeah. And that's what he's really not been doing. He's not punishing those pitcher mistakes that he typically does when he's going right.
So I want to, well, we have to get back to the pitching in a second, but let's two more things on the offense. So let's stick mildly negative, maybe positive. We'll see. One of the reasons I was so excited, like, oh my gosh, this Rangers lineup was amazing last year. And last year they had 1 month of Evan Carter and 0 months of Wyatt Langford. Oh my gosh, you're going to add two rookie of the year candidates. This is unbelievable. Now, I have been on record since the second the World Series ended, being like, we got to chill with the Evan Carter hype. Like, this dude is very, very talented, but like what he just did is unbelievable, and you'll never be able to take that away from him. And it's still an all-time draft pick, and like the Rangers deserve all the credit. And I think he's a good major league player. But there were concerns about him hitting lefties, which I remember when I saw you in spring, like that was what being talked about. And Evan's like, oh, well, I understood his perspective of, well, you can't really judge me. I haven't even had the opportunity to try, which was both part of the problem and also a totally fair retort. However, I know he's injured right now. It was very, very apparent that was still an issue. But forget that. He wasn't really exactly hitting right-handers either to the degree that we expected. Wyatt Langford's someone who we were really excited about. He makes the team out of camp. He's getting these horrible called strike calls over the first couple of months, and he's had this tough zone. But he also wasn't really making an impact. He gets hurt. Now he comes back, and we're starting to see it from him. So what have you seen from both of those guys? And also, I guess, where we're at with Evan Carter in terms of his injury, and is it true that Langford really seems to be kind of figuring it out?
Yeah, I think Evan Carter, everything you say is correct. I mean, you know, I think he got obviously off to this great start, and he looks great. He doesn't really face lefties in the postseason. So, you know, he's hitting 300 with a 900 OPS in all of those games. And I truthfully believe this, and I don't want to say this is a cop out, but I mean, he's got a back injury right now. He's got he will never say this, but you know, he didn't look right in the box for the first month and a half that he was playing. He was facing lefties, he was facing righties. He had about a week when the team, I think we were in Atlanta, that he looked like he was, you know, finally getting back to what he could do, and he looked comfortable in the box, and it's kind of been downhill ever since. And I think, you know, this is a kid, he's 21. He's now had two major back injuries. He missed a lot of time in 2021 when he was in A-ball.
Forgot about that. Yeah.
A lot of people forgot about that. Mm-hmm. And I think you, Boach, kind of alluded to this, that like, you know, he's a young guy. He wants to play. He's not being as probably crystal clear with the training staff as he could at some point when he was like, yeah, I'm fine. I can play. Quite frankly, he probably should have been shut down a little bit earlier. You know, he did get a few days off coming out of that really long road trip in Oakland and Colorado. He got a few days off at the end of that road trip and into that next homestand, and then they brought him back. And, you know, he was still sore, still didn't get better, and then they ultimately have to IL him. And I think if you just look at the process of events, that's clear. I don't think he was right early this season, and that's why he wasn't hitting as well as he should have. And he's gonna say, yeah, that's not an excuse, he needs to play better, blah 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 blah.
That's baseball players. Yeah, they'll say that, and that's fine. And like I appreciate it to some degree, but it's also like, dude, it's fine.
If you're
like,
hurt, you're hurt.
Like, because and not only that, it's so interesting because like the psychology of it is guys want to say tough through it. I can't excuse it. You know, guys play through this stuff all the time, blah blah blah, blah. And it's like, okay, that's fine, but like, I would rather you be hurt,
right?
You know, like from the I'm looking at this stretch here where, okay, so he homers on May 4th, gets his OPS back to 800, and then he goes 2 for 38, right? And then he goes on the IL. You know, I want you to be injured because like, I don't want to think like that you just forgot how to hit. that doesn't make me feel any better. So that is a very interesting point about that. And yeah, back injuries are obviously scary, and we hope that doesn't, you know, haunt him the rest of his career. So hopefully I guess you can give us a quick, any sort of timeline on him coming back anytime soon?
Yeah.
I think he
should be going to Arizona this week and hopefully being able to swing a bat soon after that. And then they'll begin his progression. So that's where we're at. And, you know, hopefully to see him soon.
Yes. Okay. So then Langford quickly, right? So he, as I mentioned, everyone kind of noticed it. It's happened with other young players in the league where umps are just having a grand old time calling strike three on this nice young man. It was absolutely impacting his numbers and his performance, but also like that is a situation where like, listen, I can't say that's the only reason he was struggling. You know, there was clearly some timing stuff. He was having trouble elevating the ball. The fact that he didn't hit a home run over the fence until a few weeks ago is pretty amazing. So what did you see from Langford at the beginning and then where we're at with him?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, he won't say this, but I think the shutdown when he kind of pulled his hammy in Kansas City was good for him. Sure. He was able to kind of reset, take a step back, look at his swing, what he was doing. And you're absolutely right. He was hitting the ball really hard and into the ground. That's why he was not elevating the ball well. It was not getting over the fence for obvious reasons. Every hit was about a 110 mile an hour out or an infield single for a long stretch there. That's what it felt like for us. And, you know, then he gets shut down. He comes back. He's got two homers in the last 2 weeks. He's elevating the ball a little bit more. He's got, I think, three doubles and three triples since coming off the injured list is what I saw the other day. And he just looks like he feels so much better at the plate. He said, him and the hitting coaches took a look at some film when he was injured, kind of made his swing a little bit more like it was when he was at Florida, obviously one of the greatest mm-hmm. college baseball players we've ever seen. And that's quite simply what it has been. And he's looked really good. He's looked like an AL Rookie of the Year candidate now.
Yeah, finally. And it is funny that he was having that trouble elevating the ball because, last year when we were debating him and Dylan Cruz, a lot of it was part of the reason why a lot of people were excited. And listen, these are all tiny samples and it's early in both their careers. So, I don't want to make too grand judgment. But it was interesting because last year it was like, okay, both of these guys hit the ball really hard. But like Cruz he's getting a lot of grounders. And like Wyatt Langford can elevate this thing, right? He's elevating and celebrating a lot more frequently than Dylan Cruz is. And so we saw it at the end of the College World Series last year. It's unbelievable the kinds of home runs that he was capable of hitting. And that grand slam he hit, I said this on the show when it happened, that grand slam he hit recently, I was like, oh, that's why Langford.
Yes.
I was like, that is that dude. Let's just get this out of the way quickly. Home run derby for the Rangers. Do we think we're going to end up with Adolis? Do we think, has there been any chatter about this, if we assume there's going to be a hometown guy?
I guess Corey only likes to do it if he is named an all-star. So I don't think.
Okay. Oh, okay. But he has done it twice. Right. So, but that's true. If he ends up the all-star, we're going to get to the all-stars in a second. It's a very important name we're about to get to. But okay. So you think maybe Seager,
right,
if he's somehow named an all-star, maybe.
I think Adolis could also do it. I think he really enjoyed it when he did it last year.
Yeah.
Obviously, hometown fans love him. And if he's a. He's right,
sure,
physically.
Sure.
I wouldn't be shocked to see that either.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it's like, hey, man, like, oh, we don't want him to mess up his swing. It's like, no, we need Adolis to be hitting more home runs.
Yeah,
so maybe this will, help. Because I mentioned, because Langford would be cool, but there's no way there's no shot that he would.
Oh, no.
He would turn it down, I feel like, so fast, at least at this point. Maybe in the future we'll see him. Okay, let's, before we finish on the pitchers, and then we take a break, we got to talk about Josh Smith. This is someone that we have, like, alluded to on our show here and there, but me and you have been talking about Josh Smith for a while now. This is someone who they acquired in the Joey Gallo trade. This is someone who attended Louisiana State University, so that's important to you.
Okay.
For those of you,
this is my pillow pet.
Who don't know. For those of you who don't know, Kennedy recording this podcast from her home in Louisiana. Where, of course, you did go to school. So a lot of LSU pride. So Josh Smith, before this season, it was like, you know what? Great guy to have around. Good utility player, utility infielder, pinch runner. I believe in the postseason last year, he pinch ran twice, I think. That was it. Obviously did not get an at-bat. Nice, nice 26th man who went to LSU, can come in, get a bunt down. Maybe he can. He doesn't really steal bases, right? But he can play a few positions defensively, and he cannot completely embarrass himself in a pinch hit situation, right? That was kind of the role of Josh
Correct.
Smith,
Charlie Culberson-esque
before this season. Charlie Culberson, but hits left-handed. Okay, that was Josh Smith. Now, he was a second round pick. Like there's a reason. It's not like he was a total anonymous guy. Great college player, obviously. But that was Josh Smith. Now, Josh Smith has an .858 OPS, which is the best on the team. The reason he is playing every day is because Josh Young got injured again very early in the season. And so he has essentially been their everyday third baseman this season. And that, again, the fact that it was like, okay, Josh Smith, if you could just come in and not suck, that would be great. Instead, he has literally been their best player. It is one of the more astonishing breakouts we've seen. Kennedy, I know we've texted about this a lot, but truly we haven't talked about it in a serious manner. What is happening? Whoa, how has this happened for him? And I know he's leading the league in hit by pitches, so that inflates his OBP a bit, but like he's raking. He's just a good hitter. What is going on here?
Yeah, I mean, I'm as shocked as anybody, actually. I mean, I covered him in college. We were in college at the same time. And I was like, right. You know, this kid's, he's great. I mean, he was on the 17 LSU College World Series team that lost to Florida in the final. And then, you know, he down with a back injury. Sophomore year, came back junior year, looked phenomenal. Gets drafted in the second round by the Yankees. And then, you know, good minor league player gets called up and kind of whatever. And he just spent this offseason like, I'm going to be better. Like, that's more or less what he did. He's like, I'm going to be better. He went down to the Dominican Winter League. Wanted to play every day. They weren't letting him play every day, so he just came home. And he worked out at Globe Life Field.
It's so funny in retrospect, because he is the perfect player to go down to Lee Dome and like get playing time. Like, I would expect him to just dominate down there. And they didn't let him, but he had a bad five games and they're like, sorry, you can't have this.
Basically.
That's so funny.
He came back, started working with the hitting coaches. Seth Connor lives here in the offseason, and he just basically tweaked his swing a little bit. I think Travis Jankowski described it as him just actually understanding hitting now. You know, you go up, you're always good at baseball, you always hit. And now he has like a better understanding of hitting. I tweeted a video a couple months back of, you know, how his swing is different this year than it was last year. His front foot is a little back. It's a little more squared up, and it just kind of allows him to square up balls more often. I mean, it's insane. Like, I quite frankly, I just can't believe it. He's got a career high in homers already. He leads his team in B4 and F4 and on base and slugging everything. And
he's just their best player. He was exclusively a pinch runner in the postseason, even though he couldn't steal a base. And now he is their best player. It's just, and by the way, he is their most deserving All-Star. Like, there's no way around it. Like, I don't know if he's actually going to get it. I think it would be awesome. I think like this very well could be his only chance to do it, because even in a year where he's doing this on a team that the stars are performing like stars, like, it's probably not possible. You know, the underlying stuff has improved a little bit, but it's not like he's suddenly, you know, hitting the ball 110. Right. You know, like, he's you know, like, yeah, the BABIP is definitely very high, but like, there are marks of a legitimately good hitter here, and it is just an amazing thing. He's hitting .323 against lefties,
which
this should not really be possible. So there's just so much about his season that is completely unbelievable. But you know what? Like, that's kind of, as you mentioned, like, if there was something you were going to kind of count on from Josh Smith, the proverbial, you know, grinder type, it was that he was going to, you know, get the most out of his game. And apparently there was more in there than we ever could have imagined. So shouts out to him, a legend of Baton Rouge through and through. I know for you, really must
go
be
Tigers,
something
I guess
to behold. Go Tigers. So good for Josh Smith. All right. Our last Rangers topic is kind of what we started with. Just give the people the general update on the timelines for these pitchers. I know Scherzer is supposed to pitch tonight. He looked amazing in his comeback. And then there's already like, oh, is he already feeling some soreness again? Like, we're just going to be doing that with Scherzer for the rest of his career. So that is like, obviously hope for the best if he's pitching great. Where are we at with DeGrom and Malley? Is there any sort of expectation? Also, Cody Bradford, who's, you know, was an important part of them last year. He's and Josh Spores, of course, you know, postseason hero. When can we expect to see some of these guys? Is there more optimism, less optimism?
Josh Spores should be back soon. He's on a rehab assignment with Round Rock right now. Good. So I'll start with him just because, you know, he's less severe injury than all of them. He'll be back soon. Cody Bradford, I believe, should be on his way to Arizona this weekend along with Evan Carter to hopefully get off a mound. I do not believe he's going to be a starter when and if he gets back. Just in terms of buildup, you know, they want him back as soon as possible, you know, 2-3 inning stints in the bullpen. Let that work. And DeGrom and Malley, obviously the big guys. Malley started facing hitters in live BPs. He's building up. The hope is that he'll be back a little bit after the All-Star game, between the All-Star game and the trade deadline. He's looking good as far as we know. We watched him do live BP a couple weeks ago when he first started throwing off the mound. So he looks good. DeGrom has been throwing his bullpens, throwing his sides. He is on track. Everything is going well as far as we know. eyeing the return right after the trade deadline. That's what we're looking at there with DeGrom, and okay. No setbacks as okay. of now, as of Friday, June 28th.
Okay. So let me just say, before we send a break here, what I just did there, for those of you who wonder what it is to do our jobs, but really what it is to do Kennedy's job, because when I go to the ballpark and I, you know, I'm lucky enough to cover these teams and sit in on the manager's scrums, most of it before pregame is just tell us who's hurt and how they're doing. That's like, yep. That is really what is being asked about. Now, I never ask those questions because it doesn't really matter to me who's injured on a regular basis, right? But it's so funny. It makes me laugh every time where it's just like, all right, how's he doing? And then they say, oh, he's doing baseball TV. So I wanted to have you get to be Bruce Bochy there. And Kennedy, you absolutely nailed it. You have been waiting for that moment and you crushed it. You told me no setbacks. You told me baseball activities. You told me, you know, oh, he's heading to Arizona. Oh, he's got this rehab. What you missed there was you needed to have a moment of like kind of lack of full confidence that something is happening. Like you have to be like, I think he's starting on Sunday in Round Rock. That would be it. Like Dave Roberts, I remember when he was being asked about all the Dodgers injuries, he was being asked about someone. He's like, I'm pretty sure he's supposed to play. I think he's going to DH on Monday. But like that was like off by a day. Like he was a little bit wrong. But you know, these managers, how are they supposed to keep track of the injuries for all these guys? Some of the managers are more on top of it than others. It's just so funny. Like, honestly, like the best part too is some managers will just do it before anybody even asks. They're just like, all right, off the top, this guy's feeling this and this guy had some soreness and blah, 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 blah. And then you actually get to the baseball question. Yeah. So that was just nice. That was nice to get to ask those questions.
Bruce Bochy would never tell us anything have been injured if enough. We didn't ask. I'm going to tell you that right now.
That's a great point. All right, Kennedy, that was a wonderful 25 minutes on the Texas Rangers. We're going to take a break, and when we return, it is Friday, and Kennedy will join us for a special edition of The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. This is Jordan Schusterman, joined by our special co-host, Kennedy Lantry, Rangers beat writer for MLB.com. Now, Kennedy, you are a listener to this show, which I really appreciate.
I am.
You know what we do on Fridays. It is the good, the bad, the ugly. Something good, something bad, something Dan Ugla from the past week. I have given you some homework to bring some good, some bad, and some Ugla. I might loan you some Ugla later on. That's fine. Nothing wrong with that. But let's start with some good. I understand you have some Rangers related good and some Rangers related bad and maybe some Rangers related ugly. We'll see. But I'll let you start. What's your good this week?
Yeah, my good. We briefly mentioned Max Scherzer earlier, but him coming out of his long and intensive rehab to throw 5 shutout innings to close out a sweep of the Royals at home. He was perfect through 4, and I had a moment sitting there. I was like, is he gonna throw a perfect game and then like retire after this? Like that, I like sat there and was like, oh, this is gonna happen.
That's so funny.
They ended up, you know, he was done after 5. It was his first start out of rehab, obviously, so they, you know, once he gave up a hit, they were like, yeah, you're done, you're out of here, old man. But you know, I had a second of contemplation in my mind where I was like, I'm gonna have to write this story today, like, oh my god, like
He was very efficient. He was very, very impressively good. I know. And by the way, yeah, I mean, Rangers were feeling good a few days ago after sweeping the Royals. And then now it's kind of gone back in the other direction since then. But but Scherzer, you know, obviously he is he's an experience, which I'm sure we'll maybe get to here in a second as well. All right. My good this week is another pitcher in Texas. It's Hunter Brown. Hunter Brown, this is a little bit of me being like, I'm not a total idiot, because I could not have been more in on Hunter Brown. I thought this guy was just the next awesome Astros pitcher. I was buying. I thought the stuff was all the way there. I think last year, the ERA wasn't great, but the strikeouts, like coming off of 22, I was like, this guy's just going to be fantastic. And for him to make 30 starts last year and just like strikeouts were there, everything else was bad. I was like, all right, maybe I was wrong. And then this year, it was getting even worse. I mean, he had like a 10 ERA in April, and I was like, what is happening? Like, this guy, the stuff still looks good, and he just sucks. Like, what is happening here? He added a sinker, And oh my God, he has been one of the best pitchers in baseball over the last month and a half. And that's a huge deal, right? Houston's just been so desperate for pitching, and they've clawed their way kind of back into the mix here. And Hunter Brown's been a huge part of it. He's won his last four starts, dominated the Rockies. I mean, granted, his last four starts have been Angels, Tigers, White Sox, Rockies. A nice little run. It's a nice little run. But the fact that there is something tangibly different with him adding a sinker, because his stuff was already a lot kind of like Tyler Glasnow, and Glasnow also adding a sinker this year is super interesting. But Hunter Brown is like, I just was such a believer, and I thought I was an idiot. And so it's nice that he's kind of making me look slightly less of an idiot. So Hunter Brown is my good this week, and really my good for the last month. But let's see him do it against some better teams.
Astros are inevitable, though.
Kennedy. Yeah. I know. I will say, I mean, if it wasn't already obvious, I'm certainly much more intimidated by them than the Rangers at this point.
It's fair.
as far as, you know, who's chasing down the Rangers, the Mariners. But anyway, let's go to our bad. Well, what is your bad this week?
So my bad is also the existence of Max Scherzer. And every time I talk to him,
respectfully,
every time I talk to him, I kind of feel a little bit worse. Because he's talking about the anatomy and physiology of his arm, and he's like, well, yeah, you know, it's the radial nerve, Kennedy. It's the radial nerve. And I'm just like, okay. I just like...
You're like, oh, yes. Like, you're like, listen, this isn't what I prepared to like.
Correct. And, you know, the Mets were in town last week. They took 2 or 3 from the Rangers, you know. Obviously, everybody wants to talk to Max Scherzer. And I forgot who, but one of the Mets beat reporters was like, you know, are you contemplating like retirement basically, because he was like, my heart is still in this, obviously, and it's like, well, it's my body, it's up to my body. And I'm just like, well, I feel a sense of existential dread every time I talk to Max Scherzer about the longevity of his career, because he's like, you know, again, it's the radial nerve, it's nerve damage. We don't know. I'm just like, okay Max.
the thing is, like, I totally... This is a totally legitimate bad. The thing that I like about it is, like, honestly, it contrasts with DeGrom too. Now, there's no right way to handle these things. Like, these are delicate things because it is literally their careers. And it is also like physical pain that these people are dealing with on a regular basis. Right. At the same time, like, I do appreciate how just aggressively transparent Max Scherzer is about all of it. Now, it's a little jarring, but like, he ain't ducking around and just being like, yeah, we'll see. He's like, here's what is hurting. Here's the problem. I'm doing my best to manage it. Sometimes it's terrible and I can't get out of bed. And sometimes I am perfect through 4 innings. And that's just going to be how we're going to do it. Now, it is still relevant and important because he's making whatever $40 million. And like, he's still a future Hall of Famer and he's important to this team. But that's just kind of, it's just like so aggressively, like, this is the deal. And we're going to do our best.
So
I can understand for you, though, just being like, man, how am I supposed to deal with this?
He's like so honest sometimes. I'm just like, okay, all right. Yeah. Okay, like, man, are you just going to start on Friday, bro? Come on.
Yeah. Like, right. Every start is an event for a completely different reason than we really thought. So we'll see. Again, I believe he is slated to start tonight at Baltimore, and we will see how that goes, as we always will. But it's also a reminder of like why those other guys coming back is so important, right? And why like they can't have enough pitching depth. Now, obviously, they're going to have to start hitting if they're actually going to be good. But Scherzer is understandably exhausting. My bad this week, because we aren't going to get to do this very often, is the New York Yankees. This team sucks. they're a good team. I'm not too worried about them, but. There are only 2 teams in baseball that have lost 8 of their last 10. And one of them is the Colorado Rockies, who are just the epitome of irrelevant and bad baseball. And then the other one is the Yankees, who have lost 8 of their last 10. They have now squandered their division lead, which is now, they are now tied with the, I guess they are like virtually tied with the Orioles. Now they got fortunate. The Orioles, you know, had a bit of a scuffle before the last couple of days. But they're going to be sweating this out here. This is going to be an interesting division race, which I'm very excited to see. But yeah, how often do you get to say that the Yankees are bad? You got to take advantage of those opportunities. So I'm just going to do it, and Yankees fans will agree with me. They'll actually say you're not going hard enough. This is the worst team I've ever seen, and I'd say you still have Aaron Judge and Juan Soto. So I don't really want to hear it. But this is really going to be interesting, especially with Alex Cora. I appreciate Alex Cora being like. He said it. He shouted them out. Everyone's like, oh, you know, how confident are you, third wild card, whatever. He's like, let's get greedy. Like, forget the third wild card. Like, that other team's not playing very well.
Not that other team.
Like, hell yeah. I was like, oh, I don't know if that was exact words, but he basically like kind of referred to the Yankees. He's been like, there's another team that's not playing very well right now. I was like, I don't think he's talking about the White Sox.
I would hazard a guess. No.
Who could he be referring to? So anyway, Yankees are bad. Ha ha ha. All right. Let's go to the Ugla. We talked about some possible Uglas before we started recording, and this Ugla I think could qualify as a good, but do you want to talk about what happened in the White Sox dugout with Shohei Ohtani this week? Because this was almost very bad and definitely very good, and you add that up and I think you get an Ugla. So what happened here?
Yeah, I think the bat boy has hands, and the bat boy has hands worthy of $700 million, basically.
Deferred.
Sure, deferred. He'll get it in 2045.
He should get it right now. This bat boy, I believe, Javier Herrera, so basically what happens, there's a foul ball. Kike Hernandez foul ball, and Ohtani is standing there. And I mean, it's not even that like he stopped the ball.
He caught it.
I mean, the dude just snagged it.
Barehanded.
Barehanded. Watching this clip, which I think a lot of people have seen, 500 times by now, there's so many amazing parts about it. When you watch this clip, what is your favorite part? Also, by the way, it's also kind of wild because the batted ball was like a check swing grounder. So while it clearly had some real exit velocity, it was kind of, I think the camera angle makes it just look like it's a line drive, which it technically wasn't really. So that's one thing to keep in mind, but still unbelievable catch. So when you watch this clip, what is your favorite part of the clip? Because I have like five things.
I think it's everybody's reaction. Everybody's just like, oh, like mouth wide open. It's like, oh my God. And then the bat boy handing it just casually to somebody behind him, just like, yeah, I did that, like, so casual. Didn't just save Shohei Ohtani's life and face.
Yeah. I don't know who he gave that ball to, but that ball should, like, belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Send it to Cooperstown, bro.
Yeah, I mean, that is, and Ohtani's like, oh, thanks, but Will Ireton's face, Ohtani's interpreter now, just in complete.
Yeah.
One of the funniest things I've seen. That is so funny. And I will also say, too, the last part about this that I'm kind of curious about. So bat boys, and you can probably speak on this, at some places, this was on the road, this was in Chicago. Oftentimes, bat boys for both teams are just provided by the home team, right? So I don't think, like, they referred to this guy Javier Herrera as the Dodgers bat boy. I don't know if he works for the White Sox or if he's because sometimes they have traveling guys, but I'm pretty sure I would assume he works for the White Sox. Because if he worked for the Dodgers, then you can start making jokes about how just like the Dodgers are the best at everything. I just think back to 2020 Chico.
Mm.
I don't know if you remember Chico, their longtime clubby who was playing the outfield during the summer camp games.
Yes, I do remember this.
And he was like throwing guys out and everything. I saw Chico still travels with the team because, again, he's worked for them forever. I saw him when I saw the Dodgers in Pittsburgh, and I was like, oh my God, that's Chico. I was starstruck. It's like, oh my God, it's their best player right there. So anyway, I don't know if Javier Herrera actually works for the Dodgers or the White Sox, but either way, he deserves a Presidential Medal of Freedom or something. He's just unbelievable. So anyway, that is definitely Ugla. My Ugla, though, is the play that happened in Anaheim. Okay, first and second, two outs. Max Schumann, don't worry about it, he's on the A's, hits a double to the gap, and the A's base runners are Mondo Alvarez, who surely everyone has heard of, Kyle McCann, who surely everybody else has also heard of. They come around to score. Now, Armando Alvarez scores. Kyle McCann kind of stumbled. Now, he's clearly safe. There's no throw to home. But he stumbles past home plate. It's very awkward. And what he quickly realizes is, I missed home. And what Armando Alvarez, who's standing there waiting for him at home, also realizes, hey, dude, you missed home. And because his momentum carries him past home plate, Armando Alvarez basically grabs Kyle McCann and says, hey, dude, you got to go back and touch home. Bad news for everybody involved here, except apparently the Angels. This is not allowed. And so there is a rule that you cannot, if at any point, you basically cannot have another base runner, if it is involved around home plate, interfere in any way, positively or negatively, you will be called out. And so what happens here, well, by Armando Alvarez pushing Kyle McCann back to home plate, he is automatically called out and shouts out to the umpire here, who was all on top of it. This is one of the most embarrassing things I think I've ever seen in a Major League Baseball game. It already was. Like, Kyle McCann kind of stumbling past home was bad enough, right? Like, that was kind of a tough look. But then for Armando Alvarez to be like, hey, dude, you got to go back. And then be called out. It's just, I mean, it's one of the funniest and most embarrassing things I've ever seen. Have you ever seen anything like this?
No, this is something that, like, I've covered a lot of high school baseball in my time. And it feels like something that happened in a high school baseball game. And, like, and then some coach, like, kicks a bucket.
Well, but, okay, I'm glad. So here's the thing. I'm glad you mentioned high school or just youth level baseball, because two things on this. First of all, if you haven't seen the clip, watch it on the A's broadcast, because Dallas Braden, realizing what has happened here, and just kind of emitting like a defeated oh no, is one of the funniest things I've seen all season. So that's the first thing I'll say. Second thing is, you mentioned, it's something you'd see in a high school game. This is something that I have seen. I remember this happened to me. I don't think it was me, or if it was like a little league game that my brother was playing in. But a version of this that is a similar rule is that the base coaches cannot touch the base runners.
Right.
And I think this actually has happened by accident in MLB at some point with third base coaches, guys running third, whatever. But I remember seeing this in a little league game where essentially a coach was pushing the base runner. Like, basically, like,
the
runner rounding third was not scooting, you know, fast enough. And so it was like, all right, let's give you a little nudge. Well, guess what? That's not allowed. It's also one of the funniest things I've ever seen. So I don't really remember exactly the sequence, but I've definitely seen that with my own two eyes. And then the last thing that I have to say, something that we've kind of talked about before on here. How do these things only happen to the worst teams? Like, I just, not that good teams don't make mistakes, but it is amazing that, like, the plays that you've never seen before, or like defensive disasters or base running blunders, or just like completely inconceivable errors, only happens to the worst teams in baseball. Like, it is really remarkable that that is kind of how this works. I don't know if, like, you saw this with the Rangers when they were, like, truly awful versions of that, but, like, it's really amazing that, like, this would happen to
right
them. And I listen, God bless these players. I know they're trying their best. It's not like they are that much worse or that much less competent, but it just always seems to happen to these teams, and I always marvel at that. Because, man, oh man. But what a moment. What a moment. This is truly one of the funniest plays of the year.
Yeah. I'm wearing an Oakland A's giveaway t-shirt actually at the moment.
Oh, well, nice.
Jackie Robinson Day.
Oh, wow. Yeah. We got okay. So did you get that when you were
in Oakland?
They give out, right, people in the press box normally get some swag. When I was in Boston earlier this week, they were giving out Boston bucket hats. I donated mine.
I also did get an Oakland bucket hat when we were in that.
Bucket hat. I am a bucket hat guy. I'm definitely not a Boston bucket hat guy. Yeah. So that's, I'm pro bucket hat, but I don't think I was going to wear that one. So, that's a good one. So shouts out to the A's. Listen, we're rooting for you. But man, oh man, that is just one of the most goofiest things we've ever seen. All right, Kennedy, let's end this podcast. One final topic is just looking ahead to the weekend. As you know, we like to track the mops, the opportunities, the four-game series.
Lots of opportunities.
Six four-game series going on this weekend, including involving your Texas Rangers, or not your Texas Rangers, the Texas Rangers who you cover. That's probably more accurate. They did lose the first game, so they are already at mop risk if they can continue to play like crap. But maybe Max Scherzer will throw a perfect game tonight and then retire and prevent them from mopping. The other six-game series, we have the Marlins in Philadelphia, the Yankees in Toronto, Reds in St. Louis, Guardians in Kansas City, and Tigers in Anaheim. And then the only other two other series that I wanted to mention, there are a few others. Mets at Astros. That's interesting because the Mets are obviously feeling themselves. Astros are certainly playing well. So that's some nice little spicy interleague action. Twins at Mariners, two teams that are, it's like, how good are these teams really?
Fair.
Even though their records are pretty good. And I think that this is a situation where maybe the tiebreaker comes into play, right? Head-to-head maybe is going to matter in the postseason at some point later on in terms of seeding and whatnot. So that's definitely a series to watch. Padres and Red Sox is another one. Two teams that have certainly been playing better lately. That's a good one. And then as we a good place to end, Pirates at Braves. Paul Skenes, LSU icon, at least one season. But boy, was one hell of a season it was. Paul Skenes will face the Atlanta Braves in Atlanta on Saturday. I am obviously very, very excited for that. I'm attending one of my college roommates' weddings on Saturday afternoon. So might have to figure out, you know, work around that.
Yeah, pull it
we'll get the phone under the table and make sure we can watch the Skenes against the Braves. Sorry, Connor, I have to watch Skenes. Anyway, let's, you know, that's a good note to end on, Kennedy, before we say goodbye. Again, LSU grad, like, what has it been like watching the Paul Skenes experience after seeing what he did in LSU last year?
The guy's phenomenal. It's amazing to watch. Like, I don't like to, like, I've lost a lot of my baseball, pure baseball fandom, obviously, at working this job. But watching Paul Skenes is just, like, electric. Like,
so I just want to say, like, and this is not, I don't, like, have you seen him in person yet? Like, I realize you probably
I have not, no.
Oh, my God. Well, I hope, I don't know if the, do they play?
Yes. I guess they must. Right after the All-Star break, I believe.
They play in Texas. Yep. Okay, in Texas for three games in the middle of August. So I hope, just for you, Derek Shelton, please line up your rotation so that Kennedy can watch Paul Skenes face the Rangers in person, because if anybody deserves it, it is her. It is an absolute treat. If he is within 500 miles of you at any point, people, go check it out. It is a delight. And especially if you're anywhere near Pittsburgh, like, go see him pitch at home. That is very cool, but it's also been cool to see him on the road. Kennedy Landry, you have more than fulfilled your obligation here as the guest co-host of Baseball Barbercast. Thank you so much. I hope it was not too much of a drag on the start of your Friday morning. Any final, I mean, go reader, MLB.com, Rangers.com, anything else you want to plug?
Oh, yeah, no. Follow me on Twitter. I dropped my letterbox on the radio a couple weeks ago, so yeah, follow me on letterbox too if you'd like. Follow me on Twitter at Ken Landry, MLB.com/Rangers, and you got me right there. Not this weekend though. Hit me up on Monday.
Well, on Monday, if the Rangers get mopped, I'm sure Kennedy will have her. Even this is the thing. Even if Kennedy's not there, her mentions are en fuego. So good luck with that. Thank you so much again. This was a delight. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Jake Mintz will be back on Monday. Everyone have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.